Welcome to Woven in the Body, a podcast dedicated to unlocking the stories held within our bodies and awakening a new paradigm of consciousness. I'm your host, Christiana Dyckman, a therapist, spiritualist, mother, wife, and an Aries passionate about shifting humanity's perception of who we truly are and what we're capable of achieving. To explore the full range of our offerings, including classes, retreats, and events, visit us at www.theflowerofliffoundation.com. Don't miss out on our upcoming events and bonus content. Sign up for our newsletter on our website. Now, let's dive into today's episode.
Welcome to Woven in the Body. And this is a podcast devoted to unveiling the wisdom encoded in your body. And in this episode, we're going to look closely at how our earliest experiences encode information into our psyche. This is a series that is going to get a little bit more technical about naming different types of birth imprints, which are deep pre-verbal patterns we inherit and internalize at the moment of our arrival on Earth. And when I mean on Earth, I mean into the breathing air of Earth, not necessarily when we're conceived, although there's plenty of birth imprints that we can go on from preconception to the time that you were in the womb with your parents. But in this particular series, we're going to name birth imprints that happen when you are actually physically being born, whether you were born vaginally or by cesarean, if you're in a hospital or you were at a home, if you were gently born or if there were interventions, your entry into the world carries a profound imprint for the rest of your life. And you can work through and process the material that happened to you when you were born in order to discover more about who you are, what you believe in, what you're here for, and to develop more self-realization. Because when we do come in and we are vulnerable and at the expense of our caretakers and the world around us, we're not able to do anything for ourselves. But now when you're listening to this and you're an adult, you have the capacity to make changes to those earlier experiences that may be harming you now or may be programmed into your subconscious in a way that you're not even aware of, and it's creating challenges in your current life. So this series is to be informative for humanity. And if you are a practitioner who works with healing for families and individuals, we do offer more advanced training courses and mentoring tracks for practitioners. So if you want to know more about that, and if that check out our website, flowerofliffoundation.com, under education tab, if your interest or your curiosity is piqued right now from hearing more from this podcast. But let's get into a little bit of the neuroscience. So from a neuroscience standpoint, birth is a critical wiring event. The infant brain is in a hyperplastic state. And it's rapidly forming connections in response to the intensity of sensory and emotional input. So the nervous system is flooded with signals all the time: touch, sound, light, pressure, temperature. And these first experiences become really templates that are encoded in our bodies. So the body later will interpret stress or safety or relationships in a way that's filtered through the template that was set in these foundational experiences. So the way we meet that first threshold of birth, whether we have support or there was resistance or if there was overwhelm or maybe there was great attunement to your story, doesn't matter. The first threshold creates pathways that influence how we handle thresholds throughout life. And when I mean thresholds, really moments of major transition. And we can even think of moments of transition as going to bed at night. How do we go to sleep? Are we able to sleep well? Do we stay asleep well? Or do we wake up consistently? Is it hard for us to settle in our bodies? Or let's just say something a little bit bigger. It's the first day of school. I'm recording this in later August, and lots of kids have to get ready to go to school. And what is that transition like for the family or a child, or if you're an adult and if you're starting a new job, that's a major transition. So those are the moments or examples that I'm giving to you that are thresholds. And when we pass over thresholds, which happens thousands of times in our lifetime, the way we handle crossing a threshold is literally encoded in us from our first threshold crossings, when we are conceived and when we're born into the physical world. So birth is not just a single event, it's a culmination of field dynamics. And these field dynamics that I'm talking about in today's episode is the field dynamics of gestation. So for 9 months, the developing nervous system has been marinating in the chemistry, the emotions, the subtle energy field of the mother. And these stress hormones, oxytocin, serotonin, cortisol, they all play their part, shaping how receptive, defended, or sensitive the child's system is even before the moment of delivery. So by the time of birth, the baby is already tuned in to the atmosphere it has grown within. So the act of being born really is an act of crystallization. It's really a tuning into a lived, embodied experience for the first time. So why do we care about any of this? And we always go back to this premise. It's very simple. You cannot heal what you have not consciously become aware of. So our birth, most of us don't remember our birth. And you're like thinking maybe, how can I even remember my birth? I wasn't even talking. I don't even remember until I was up until the age of 3. And in my case, I have very few memories until I was really 5. So this is common for everybody. This birth story that we're talking about is a pre-verbal time, but there are ways to unlock it and to access the information through inquiry and actually studying how you live your life in patterns. So that's why we care. That's why we want to uncover what your birth was like so that we can really go back to the keystone of where change can be reprogrammed into your mind, into your body. So when you visit gently birth in your story, you're not reliving a trauma. And it's not about getting the nervous system a chance to complete what may have been interrupted, or to receive the support that you may have been missing. But it's really to create new neural pathways through your own visualization power now in the presence. And when we do this, we do it in a time that we're grounded, that we feel safe, and that we're in connection in a field. So in this way, revisiting birth has the power to rewrite the nervous system using all the little ingredients or the recipe that you need for a nervous system to grow versus a nervous system to contract and freeze or highly tense or revved up in the amount of fear. It doesn't mean that you won't feel anxiety or fear or have these thoughts as you're reliving a birth experience, but you're doing it in a way that's being held by a field that's different than the field you came in with. We'll explore more about this. So, in this first episode of this mini series that's going to come out over the next couple of months, I really want to bring to life a story of a participant from our most recent Soul Seed retreat, which is what we offer here at Flower of Life. We do offer in-person workshops, retreats, classes, online endeavors that you can go to deepen your education. But in this case, we were at a retreat. It was a 3-day retreat that we did back in June, and we call these Soul Seed processing groups so that you can spend time reflecting upon your birth story with others who are also going through the same processing. And when you do this, it really magnifies the field or the information that is enabled to arise because you've taken a pause in your life, you've stepped away from the world, and you engage in these somatic activities and psychological activities, so reflection, movement, breath, different actual exercises like going through a birth tunnel with human beings, which is really wild. And when you do this, it awakens not only your birth story, but the birth story of others. And this woman in particular, she wove together such a beautiful story about how you can heal dissociative patterns in yourself. She had a deep kind of apathetic or indifferent approach to the world. And she really was able to grow into a moment of vulnerability. It was really beautiful to behold. So what was really interesting about this particular Soul Seed retreat that I'm going to get into information about is that we also coupled it with the Gene Keys, which is insights that you gain about a person's natal chart. And you mix that with the somatic healing of the actual process group. And it really accelerates how much information that you can pull out in a very short time. So before we get into her rebirth process, let me just set the stage through the lens of the Gene Keys. Like, what is the Gene Keys? Who wrote the Gene Keys? So it's a body of wisdom that was channeled and articulated by Richard Rudd. And it draws inspiration from the I Ching, astrology, and modern genetics. And it proposes that each of us is born with a unique genetic and energetic blueprint. So within this blueprint are patterns, or what Richard Rudd calls keys. And these keys contain a spectrum of consciousness. So there's three aspects to the keys, or three levels within each key. And the lowest level, or the lowest vibration, since we're dealing with frequency here, sits in the shadow. And most of you probably listening to this podcast, you've heard of shadow work, or just dealing with your weaker side, or the side that you may not even know that you have, what you fear. This shadow aspect that we carry of ourselves in multiple layers is really, they're contracted expressions of energy. And they're often linked to early wounds and survival strategies. So right in the context of birth, this is where, when we're coming into the world and we've left this divine state of energetic beingness, and we come into the restriction of the planet and the different conditional aspects that we have to suppress ourselves or make ourselves small to fit into. That's what we're talking about when we mean the shadow. So the shadow is the lowest vibration of a gene key. And then it goes up a notch to the middle level, which is the gift. Richard Rudd calls the middle aspect of each key the gift. And this is where the creative, transformative potential that emerges when we embrace and actually work with our shadow. So when we give the shadow meaning and understand how it came about, and what are the virtues and the vices that are on the flip side. So every shadow, you're in the vice, but on the flip side of the vice is a virtue. So that's when we get into the highest frequency of this razor edge point of virtue, vice. And when you overcome that duality and you move into something that's higher, that's transcendent of this gift, that's when you move into the highest frequency, which Richard Rudd calls the city. And this is the radiant, transcendent state of consciousness that's really available to you when this particular shadow element is fully integrated. So the beauty of the Gene Keys is that it doesn't frame the shadow as something to get rid of, but rather a portal. It shows us that our wounds are not obstacles, but they're our evolution. They're the very pathway through which our higher gifts emerge. And the journey of discovering it is through our awareness, self-realization, going back in and giving something another look and finding out, broadening our horizons, our perceptual field, and seeing all the different energetic influences that were playing into that moment in time versus when we think of it in a trauma standpoint, we've got our blind sides on and we have tunnel vision, and we only see very few aspects of the event itself and the meaning behind it. So the idea of going to a soul seed process retreat is that you're giving yourself a chance, time and space, to go from tunnel vision to wide open. I'm on the ocean side. I can see the skyline for miles. That's what we're doing when we go through such a beautiful process. And this opening of portals really is transcendent. It's how we become sovereign beings, how we liberate ourselves from the social conditioning or the imprints that happened to us when we were being raised. So this particular participant, switching over to her now and her story, she gave everybody, filled out an intake form to participate in the event. And I had them do Richard Rudd's free profile that he offers on his Gene Key website. Anybody can get it. Anybody listening now, you can go to the website that he has and go to the free profile, and you can download your own. It's like a glyph that you get of all of your Gene Keys. And each person that comes to the Soul Seed Retreat, usually I've gone through an inquiry process with them. Or in this particular case, I had known this girl. I had been working with her for a number of years now, and I knew a lot about her patterns, her behaviors. So that was helpful. But the reason why it's good to know a little bit about somebody's story and their kind of lifelong trajectory is it gives me the ability to focus in on a certain gene key. And in this particular case, we focused on her gene key number 16 that she had. And this gene key 16, the shadow frequency expresses as indifference. So I'll say that again. The shadow aspect of gene key 16 is indifference. And in the context of her life, this shadow wasn't simply about a lack of interest, being indifferent, but it really showed up as a kind of emotional disconnection, a defense mechanism that had taken root very early on, likely linked, not likely, but linked to her preverbal imprints, because she was born in a family of domestic violence and also in a very challenging social construct, with a lot of scarcity imprints, meaning not a very well-funded family. Instead of being able to stay attuned and connected in moments of intensity during her life, her system or nervous system defaulted to detachment, really, as a way of coping. But when you engage with this girl, the detachment, like, you wouldn't know that she was detached. Rather, you would be confronted with a gruff, rough, like, back up, leave me alone kind of attitude. Somebody that you would encounter in life who has a chip on their shoulder. That was like the feel vibe that you had when you meet with this girl, even though she's this amazing, incredible, really beautiful human being. But you would have to be a person that would want to work through that initial reception that you feel from her field in order to really get to know her. So when I saw this in her profile, it had immediately offered a compass that we could work with during that 2.5 days that we were together. And it gave a language to what I had already been sensing in her body story, that one of her core wounds was this tendency towards shutting down and numbing, which really, it was a defense mechanism because that's kept her safe. But that was her old story. Now she was really like, I don't want to be like that anymore. And she was awakening to the fact that this behavior that she had adopted was now limiting her ability to fully feel and to fully connect in relationships that she was having. So she was tired of repeating the same old story with broken relationships, broken heart, anger, and this numbness. So the gene keys really helped me not only to name the wound that she was dealing with at a core level, at an archetypal level, at like life trajectory level, but it also helped me glimpse the path forward. Right. Because Gene Key 16, remember, has two other aspects to it that are higher vibrational frequency. And this middle frequency that I mentioned earlier is the gift. And for her, Gene Key 16, the gift is versatility, the capacity to bring curiosity, play, and creative engagement into life instead of checking out. And if she was to really work with this shadow aspect of herself, or this like trigger reaction that she gets when she's triggered and she goes into this indifference, she would be able to master the highest aspect of this Gene Key, which is mastery. Ironically, the deep embodiment of skill and artistry that comes from being fully present, or present with experience. And that is mastery. How cool. I was really excited when I saw this for her, because I was like, I get it. Now I get why you're so focused and you're so attuned and you're into perfection, because your soul wants to reach a level of mastery. And so from the very beginning, we could frame her healing not just as getting rid of indifference, but really as reclaiming her ability to engage with life in a creative, skillful, and embodied way. And just backing up a little bit to before, so we can get into what she actually stated was her intention that she wanted to transform by discovering more about her birth story, we have to understand that indifference for her showed up as sarcasm and really emotional disengagement, or what I mentioned earlier, dissociation, and like a cool practicality that gave her an edge when she worked with people. And not necessarily a warm, fuzzy edge, but a, I don't know if I can be around you. I may get hurt, or I may get burned by your edge. So underneath this armor that she had externalized was really an ocean of grief. And this is where she really showed up in the retreat in the very beginning and said out loud her fear and why she felt she had this indifference was because she didn't want to fail. I remember mastery, failure. What if I never reach that goal? I'm a failure. It was also of her fear of being too emotional, that she had learned early on, and she stated this right in the very beginning, that her emotions were too big for her family. They were too big for those who were taking care of her and her immediate family, because they weren't able to handle all the emotions because they were living in a lot of trauma. And this fear progressed into she just wasn't good enough. This fear of not being good enough to be loved. So these were her three big fears that she had internalized and developed ways that she functioned well in the world. She appeared really busy. She was very competent with, she's articulate, she's smart, she's self-driven. But internally, there was this kind of, let's call it spiritual boredom. Because she had learned to shut down her soul from true presence and connection. And therefore, she was really burning up inside with boredom because she couldn't be herself. She couldn't be this magnanimous person that wanted to bust out of that shell and get into self-mastery. So this was the foundation that we entered in with, and it was really the perfect doorway into our rebirth ritual. So I'm going to just take a little breath, put in a little bit of music here before we move into what we did in the Soul Seed process retreat when we engaged with the actual human birth tunnel that we built. Okay. Okay, so the second part of this podcast is really about explaining what happens in a rebirth process at a retreat. And for this particular participant that we're sharing the story about, carrying the armor, the reason why it's really interesting to listen or to watch other people go through their own birth process is that you pick up a fractal of your own story. We all carry armor. We may not have the gene key 16 in our natal chart, but it doesn't mean that we haven't been conditioned or gone through experiences that we have armored our heart and protected us from being vulnerable in front of others, because maybe we've been shamed or we've been told we're not worthy or we've been denied access to actually meeting our emotional needs. So there's a number of reasons why it's really profound to watch another person go through their own birth process in addition to you doing your own individual reflection. So this young woman, when we all got to check in together about our intentions at the start of the weekend, it's very important to have your own formulated intention that you state in front of a group out loud, so that it's like you send it out into the universe, and the container that frames around you really is molded by your personal intention. And for her, her statement was that she wanted to break the cycle of generational trauma. Now, she didn't necessarily say it in these exact words in any of these times. It doesn't do a service when we share on a podcast of anybody's story, because we're all like a universe inside of us of experiences. So just honoring the fact that this was one piece of her story that we were going to highlight, not her entire story. So what we did was we created a ritual birth tunnel for her to move through. And we did that by the human bodies that were there. We had a really nice open floor space in this home, lots of light. We had yoga mats down, blankets, and we created this kind of womb-like cave space in front of a tunnel that we shaped either sometimes with the pillows from the couch. But then when it was time to move a person through the birth canal or the tunnel itself, we would have individuals lay down hands and knees, not lay down, but get on their hands and knees, staggered, and form a line with their human bodies that would create this tunnel. So by doing this reenactment, it's a simple way to somatically in your body awaken a field of memory where early imprints live, not as stories, but as embodied patterns. And to deepen the process, I invited her to externalize parts of her inner experience into the room. And when I mean inner experience, we had already highlighted a bit of this gene key 16 and the shadow of indifference and this trait that she has of armoring herself, armoring her disposition, armoring her face, the mask that she puts on in front of people, and also armoring her nervous system through the actual mechanism of dissociation when she checks out and is not connected with a person. So this internal process that she was doing, we now wanted to represent with an object. That way she could feel it and see it. It's in a tangible sense versus this invisible archetypal force that we're working with. So in order to externalize part of her experience, we use principles drawn from approaches like family constellation, if you've heard of that or not. It's something that you can easily look up in Google or ChatGPT, or also identity-oriented psychotrauma therapy, or what we call IOPT. And this is where you take objectifiable aspects of the psyche that are, and you represent them by other people or objects in space. So when these parts are given voice and form outside the individual, they begin to reveal truths that are often hidden when held internally, and also hard to really grasp or comprehend. So we're bringing it into the physical. And what we did, or I did, was ask her to choose first two people within the group that would represent something about her internal world, that a conditioning force that impacted her when she was in the womb, when she was growing up, in her earliest experiences. So one person I wanted her to select would represent domestic violence in her home. And the other person she needed to select would represent all of her intimate relationships, whether it was with a family member, a lover, that kind of, but our personal work relationship, but very generic in that this one person would represent all of her intimate relationships. So the role of the two people selected was simply to just hold an unconditional, non-judgmental presence as she was moving through the birth tunnel. And it's wild when you do this and really take it into life, because the people who step into a role, or as either a person or an object, or even like we're talking about an archetype, they start to feel things in their body that is representative of the energy of this objectifiable force. So it's really interesting, but it brings everything to life. And it gave her nervous system a new relational imprint also, because we were providing a safe space, a retreat out from her regular world, with people who were there for an intention. They want to heal. They want to grow. They want to uncover truths that are buried inside of their body. Yes. So this new situation was allowing her to to repattern her nervous system. So giving her the possibility of meeting life and love without fear of rejection or indifference. Really cool. And then, so we had her pick her two people. And then I wanted her to pick an object in the room that would actually represent her heart's armor. And this armor, what I'm talking about, it's like the protective wall she had built over time to stay safe. So this armor would travel with her through the tunnel represented in whatever object she picked. And it would be a physical reminder of the split between the wise, beautiful, adaptive strategy she developed at a young age to protect her heart, as well as a reminder of the actual split, like the barrier it created with the people she loved. So at the threshold, literally when she was there in the space, like in front of the human birth tunnel, we got to sit and talk for a minute, and she selected this box. It was a tissue box. It was a wooden box that was holding tissues. So we took the tissues out. And so she had this box, and she was given a choice that she could carry with this wooden box, carry it through the birth canal with her, or she could leave the armor, the box, behind anywhere along the tunnel that she wanted, or to carry it forward with consciousness. And the idea of releasing it in the tunnel, per se, would be symbolic of releasing her old survival strategy, or carrying it forward with her would symbolize her transforming it from unconscious defense into a chosen, integrated part of her story. And this moment mirrored the threshold of birth itself. So when the body emerges from one world into another, carrying with it the imprints and decisions that shape her lifetime. So by ritualizing this passage and by giving her system the choice that was not available at her original birth, she was able to renegotiate her imprint of indifference and begin embodying a new pathway of presence and engagement. So beautiful just to watch her struggle, like literally move through this small, compact, tight space. And she's holding on to this box. So it required effort for her to carry this through the tunnel, which also made it such a beautiful somatic reenactment of her birth experience, of all these archetypal energy that were shaping her. They were shaping her beliefs. So great place to pause as we move into this third segment and just take a deep breath And feel your seat, feel your feet. And just honoring the story of what it feels like to build a new relationship to how you protect yourself. Okay, moving into this third segment now, the rebirth. Here we are with her moving through the tunnel slowly, deliberately, and something miraculous started to unfold. You can feel the energy in the space when you're tracking it as a practitioner, as a participant. And remember, these other two people who are there, representative of domestic violence in her home and other her relationships. So as she was moving through, she chose to keep her box and she didn't want to leave it behind. The object symbolizing her protective armor, which originally, like on the external, you would think, yeah, you want to rip that off, leave that behind, get rid of it. But some new relationships started to emerge with this protective armor. And what was the new relationship is that she was becoming conscious of it. And her moving down the canal and holding the box, it was no longer reactive. It was sovereign. She emerged out of this tunnel with this new awareness that she didn't have to tear down the walls around her heart or give them up, but that she could keep them, but let them down to open her heart when she felt safe to do so. She realized the armor wasn't bad. It had protected her. And now it could become like a sacred space, a treasure chest, where she could hold her heart and she could open that box on her own terms when safety, when discernment or relational trust allowed her to do so. And therefore, we saw a new kind of emergence, a caterpillar into a butterfly, this chrysalis take place. That she was no longer melting into collapse or dissociation, but rather facing her fears with consciousness. And really, before us, what was happening was this was an alchemy, a freeze transforming into flow, or the alchemy of witnessing dissociation transmuting into presence with choice. So she had become so programmed by the defense walls that she was unconscious to them. And she more or less approached every relationship in her life with these walls up the majority of the time. And the self-realization was that she had the wisdom to discern who was worthy of seeing her vulnerability. And it wasn't everybody. In fact, it's very few people who really have the right to share sacred space with her because is such a sacred person. And her heart, her gifts, all of this she could choose to show her pearls, like her pearls, to the people that she wanted to bring close to her, rather than ubiquitously ban everybody from her heart space. So here's where her gene key came full circle. And this was the gift of versatility. So it's versatility is the artistry that returns when the heart is re-engaged. And it's about devotion to expression, refining your gifts until they shine, not as performance, but as embodiment in herself. And she experienced this spark in the process of her exploring her own birth story. She gained creative permission and a chance to be vulnerable in a field of safety. And so, gaining the somatic knowledge and experience of choice, how and when to open her heart instead of automatically shutting it down. Really cool stuff. It's awesome to witness. And it really is a testimony to the sacred work that rebirthing the self can be. And it's so moving. I'd love to just share with you her testimony after she had gone through this birth canal and she processed this information. She'd slept on it for a night. And the next day, when we all checked in with our stories, she shared this beautiful testimony. And it really moved me. So I'd love to share that with you now and then wind up the call.
I don't like sharing. Sherry, because I don't want to be a bother. I don't like it. It's too much. And I like my box. I like my box. I need to be the strong one. I need to figure it out. My babies are everything. And I think that's why I stay here. I don't have my mom nor my grandma, and they were not always the best.
Beautiful. Okay, I'm so glad that we had this, these words that she could share with us, and so you could get a feel for how much it moved her, and that it wasn't abstract, this process. It's not metaphorical. It's somatic. It's neural, and it's deeply real. So just metabolizing all of that, I just want to share that in our next episode, we're going to look at cesarean birth imprint and how the experience of being pulled from the womb can really create patterns of hypervigilance, our distrust in the process, and difficulty initiating action without external force. So each story in this series that we're going to bring up is an invitation to revisit not only your own origin point, but listening to the stories of others to activate the story that you carry within you. And if you feel called to do this work with support, check out our events at theflowerofliffoundation.com/events. Our Alchemy for the Soul program begins this fall, and it's the perfect container to begin this deeper unfolding. Also, we have, there's my dog, more advanced trainings for embodiment for practitioners who are working in this kind of field of pre and perinatal psychology and really in personal transformation, depth psychology, developmental psychology, like all of that. It's, we have a lot of really unique programs on the frontier of quantum science. So until next time, breathe deeply, listen to your body, and remember, the story didn't start when you were born, but it can be rewritten here. Till next time.